You are listening to Larry Connors, USA.
You want answers?
I think I'm entitled.
You want answers?
I want the truth!
You can't handle the truth!
This is Larry Connors, USA. Larry Connors, USA.
This is going to be a long, contentious week. I would just ask one thing of the committee. To the extent possible, let's make it respectful. Let's make it challenging. Let's remember the world is watching.
The words of Senator Lindsey Graham today as they open the Senate nomination hearing for Judge Amy Coney Barrett. October the 12th, 2020. Columbus Day. Normally, Congress would be in recess, but this is so important. This started today, and the idea is to have the confirmation passed to the floor of the Senate by the 22nd and confirm Judge Barrett as the next Supreme Court justice before the election. And the Democrats are pulling the knives out, looking for grenades, howitzers, anything they can to attack. But I want to remind you, this is not just an attack upon her and her nomination. And it could get very vicious personally with her. Already we're seeing some signs of that nature. Which you thought maybe they wouldn't do that. But they will. They have no shame. But this is also a battle and a denouncement of President Trump. You understand that. John Malcolm, expert on the Supreme Court nomination process, will be joining us later in this hour. We're going to get into more details of how that's going to shake out. And basically, Democrats have already said, we can't stop it, so I guess they might as well just throw mud at it. And by the way, are you aware that Joe Biden over the weekend asked again, are you in favor of packing the court if you win? If you win election, will you pack the court? In other words, you will increase the number of justices above 9 just so you can add more Democrats to it. And you know Biden's response to you, the voters? You don't deserve to know what I will do at this point. You don't deserve to know what the next president would be, hopes to be, would do, reference the Supreme Court. You don't deserve to know. Listen, liberals are changing tactics. I'm asking this. Are they shutting down BLM, Antifa riots and violence so Trump and GOP cannot use that to emphasize that violence in the streets and progressives want to defund, even abolish police? That they do not want their other goals highlighted, so support abortions, even at birth. They want to open our borders to illegals, pass laws, take your guns, destroy the family, destroy jobs, raise taxes. Liberals are not concealing what they will do. Even basic Democrats have reason to fear. But they might end up drinking the liberal Kool-Aid just because they hate Donald Trump. And of course, they continue to say Trump is responsible for all 200,000 COVID deaths we've had in the nation. He is responsible. As if Joe Biden had been in, he would have waved a magic wand and everything would have stopped and we wouldn't have that death count. And Joe Biden and the Democrats say, we would have done this, we would have done that. And remember, they were fighting against Trump in the beginning stages as he was doing what he could do. Do not buy their lies. I don't care who you end up voting for, but you question each and every story from either side. Do you really blame Trump for all 200,000 plus deaths? Really? Or you're not going to simply ask maybe if the governor of New York is responsible for an order sending COVID patients into nursing homes, declaring they had to keep them? And while Trump is looking for issues to battle and fight, yes, over the weekend he did get on the Rush Limbaugh show and use that F word, I should say, last Friday. Ron better not F with us, or they're going to get something they never expected. One loyal fan asked me today, how many countries have been messing with us since Trump was elected? In fact, this listener said, I think President Trump needs to stress how he's made America safer from other nations and given us a new respect. Before we wrap up over the next 2 hours, Dr. Gerard Lomero will join us on the latest look at how this confirmation hearing might affect the races. And also, I'm not voting for Trump. I want you to hear this. I'm not voting for Trump. Before we're done, lock and load. Ready. On the right.
You can email Larry at LarryConnorsUSA@gmail.com. LarryConnorsUSA@gmail.com.
We are slowly returning to normal as we knew life before COVID. Still, you need to be cautious. Make sure your business, school, place of worship are safe. Now, that's where Wellington Environmental can help. You can schedule professional fogging or deep cleaning with just a phone call. I'll give you a number. But first, you should know Wellington Environmental now offers fogging equipment you can use. These individual units are in high demand. Wellington has them available for now. They cost about $500, but my listeners get a big price break, a $100 discount. Save $100 just by saying you heard about it on Larry Connors USA. For more information on getting your personal fogging device or to schedule professional fogging, 314-644-4930. 314-644-4930. Be well with Wellington Environmental.
This segment of Larry Connors USA is brought to you by my friends at John Beal Roofing, covering homes and businesses throughout the Midwest. Best quality, lowest prices. John Beal, 1-800-NEW-ROOF, 1-800-NEW-ROOF.
This is Larry Connors USA.
Larry Connors USA.
To my Democratic colleagues, I respect you all. We've done some things together and we've had some fights in this committee. I've tried to give you the time you need to make your case, and you have every right in the world to make your case. I think I know how the vote's going to come out, but I think Judge Barrett is required for the good of the nation to submit to your questions and ours. This is going to be a long, contentious week.
Those are the words of Senator Lindsey Graham, Republican, South Carolina, chair of the Senate Judiciary Committee, as they kick off the nomination proceedings for Judge Amy Coney Barrett. This is taking place at a very odd and strange time in reference to what's happening across our nation. Yes, yes, we're very close to the election. And yes, you can accuse the Republicans of trying to rush it through just in case, Trump is not reelected. And yes, in the past, the Republicans were arguing 200 plus days out from an election that Obama should not try to appoint someone to the Supreme Court because he was not going to be around to serve another term. He had reached his max term. And for the vote or the nomination to come with the next president, even if it were Hillary Clinton. But I'll also remind you, the Democrats at that time were saying, no, he's still president. He should do it. He should do it. My position is, yeah, at that time, I really thought, let's go ahead and wait for the next president, even 200 plus days out. I still not changed my position, but here's the difference of things as to how they have changed. And I certainly won't fight against it. At that time, you had the White House controlled by the Democrats, Republicans controlling the Senate. They could have at least given a hearing to Merrick Garland as nominated by Obama, and had the results already known before they voted that it wasn't going to pass through. It would have been a sham, and it would have been clarified as that, and we understand it. And now the difference is Republicans control both the White House and the Senate, and the Senate has already said, we will get this done. And Democrats basically acknowledging, we can't do anything about it, really. Now, you heard that in the opening, Senate Judiciary Chairman Graham saying, let's have some civility. The whole world is watching. It's going to be a long, contentious week as they go through the various statements of senators, each allowed to make 10-minute statements. Then later, Judge Barrett will make her statement. And the questioning scheduled to start tomorrow. And again, in the midst of this, we have COVID. So we have, normally, instead of these senators all across the dais up top, the junior senators, those less ranking in the Senate Judiciary Committee, are now sitting down in front of the dais, spread out a little bit, so everybody has equal room. So it looks like the kids sitting at the kids' table. That's what it amounts to. And, of course, the reporters and photographers are limited in how they can approach and do things, as is the audience watching. And I got to tell you, I look and I watch Judge Barrett sitting there with a black mask over her face, looking like she's guilty and trying to hide something, or that she's been gagged. She has been gagged to some extent already. But it's one of those things they think we've got to do. Here we are in this room. Everybody's got to have a mask on unless you're speaking. A substantial majority of the American Bar Association, the American Bar Association Committee, responsible for evaluating judges, has rated Judge Amy Coney Barrett, quote, well qualified to serve on the Supreme Court. Well qualified. Democrats had considered the ABA ratings to always be, quote, the gold standard of judicial nomination. But we know Democrats, if it doesn't fit their standard, it's not so much gold, it's tarnished, it's fake gold, fool's gold. In 2018, the ABA unanimously found Brett Kavanaugh to be, quote, well qualified. Well, we know what the Dems did. They started accusing him of being a gang rapist. So the attacks are going to start rolling out, and not just inside the hearing room, but outside. We're going to cover a lot of that this hour and next hour, because even though they know they're going to lose, the Democrats are using this as a platform to condemn, slur, slander Trump and anyone associated with him, which would be this mother of seven who's a well-qualified federal judge and, according to the ABA committee, well-qualified to be a Supreme Court justice. Already we're seeing some of the Democrats call this entire hearing a sham. No surprise there. I understood that. You should, too. You should understand it's politicized. But there is a question that Judge Barrett is going to have to deal with. There are a couple things in her past that, one, she had at one point signed a ad in a paper supporting life over abortion. She also had failed, apparently, to disclose talks on Roe v. Wade hosted by anti-abortion groups on the Senate paperwork. The White House spokesman, in response to this complaint and issue that she had been in signing off on an advertisement favoring life as opposed to abortion, and then also talking about anti-abortion in front of two student groups, The White House response is Judge Barrett submitted her lengthy Senate judiciary questionnaire, spoke with an overwhelming majority of the Senate Judiciary Committee, and continues to be transparent through her confirmation process. Well, of course, some of the Democrat senators didn't even want to talk to her, so we're not going to. Her association with anti-abortion groups has been under scrutiny, as I said, including signing a Right to Life ad in 2006. But there's been very little about her work with the anti-abortion groups at Notre Dame, where she gave talks hosted by the anti-abortion student groups while she was a member of the Notre Dame Chapter University Faculty for Life, which staunchly opposes abortion. The lecture that Barrett did disclose was entitled Roe at 40, the Supreme Court, Abortion, and the Culture War that Followed. That was taking place in January 2013. Open to the university community, co-sponsored by the university's Constitutional Studies major. She gave a part of a small seminar for students, quote, on changes to law and life for women after Roe v. Wade, entitled Being a Woman After Roe. The Right to Life seminar series apparently was not disclosed when she was originally dealing with her federal judgeships, and apparently has not been officially disclosed by her going into this hearing. You can't hide it. I don't think she's trying to hide it. It's just one of those things that, of all the documents, that we have everything there. We already know the media is going to be helping carry the water for the Democrats. Let me give you a perfect example here. In a lengthy investigative piece, a New York Times reporter is now analyzing Barrett's religious beliefs. Remember Senator Dianne Feinstein, when Barrett was up for federal judgeships, complained, the dogma lives loudly within you, and that's a concern. The dogma she's referring to is your Catholic religion, and the Catholic religion says no to abortion. So that's what this New York Times reporter was analyzing her religious beliefs. But I don't think that the majority of the Times readers are going to actually make the connection and understand where this reporter is coming from. This is also a reporter who was on the team that won a Pulitzer Prize for false reporting on the president's alleged collusion with Russia during the 2016 presidential campaign. They get a Pulitzer Prize for doing a fake story on something that now we know we have proven does not exist, and more documents continue to come out. And with the president saying, I'm ready to declassify everything, and he did last week, and yet still not all of it's been released. We had on the air last week Fred Flights, president, CEO of the Center for Security Policy, hinting that something else was going to happen. Over the weekend, I kept seeing more rumblings that Trump is fed up that these things are not being declassified fast enough. He wants them fully unveiled before the election. So we may see more along that line. But in the meantime, you got the media helping whatever they can do to make Barrett look bad. But I want to remind you, while this battle is over Roe v. Wade, it's going to be over other issues as well. Affordable care, that's a very big thing for some of them, as we'll find out over the next part of today's program. As Senator Feinstein is already promising, I'm going to grill Barrett on Obamacare. I want you to remember this. Barrett is the one in the chair being grilled by Senators Feinstein and Leahy and Durbin of Illinois. And Durbin of Illinois, he's not pulling punches. He's making it very clear what his agenda is. And when you listen to this next soundbite coming up from Senator Durbin of Illinois, Democrat, it should tell you everything about the mindset of the Democrats at this hearing. They're not really concerned so much about Barrett and her views. They're really not. Their main constant demanding resistance issue is Donald Trump.
This may be one of the most consequential elections in our nation's history, because for the first time in the history of the United States, an incumbent president refuses to commit to a peaceful transition of power if he loses the election. This president, in his vanity and constitutional recklessness, refuses to commit to accept the will of the American electorate.
Right. Now, as Hillary accepted the will of the American electorate when the election didn't go the way they wanted. She's continuing to resist. But he wants you to believe that Obama may have to be hauled out by military troops to get him out of the Oval Office. It's a lie, but they do a great job in spinning and peddling lies. And one of the Democrats, the guy leading the Democrat ticket, is admitting what I know you don't need to know. Whatever I want to do as a president, you don't need to know. So says Joe Biden. Please stand by for that story.
You can connect with Larry on Twitter at Larry Connors USA.
Not a yes, sir. Not a follower. Fit the box, fit the mold, have a seat in the foyer. Take a number. I was lightning before the thunder.
Thunder.
This is Larry Connors, USA.
Larry Connors, USA.
So in Las Vegas, Joe Biden again asked, if you're president, do you plan to pack the Supreme Court? In other words, add members to the Supreme Court. We know they plan on doing that. We know they are. And Joe's taking the attitude up to now that, look, if I say anything about it, that's going to be the news of the day. So I'm not saying anything. As if he thinks by not answering the question, it goes away. It becomes even bigger news. But he did something that made it even bigger yet. In Las Vegas, he was asked about packing the court with extra justices. Now, in the primary, Joe Biden had opposed packing the court. And then he said Thursday, you'll know my position on court packing the day after the election, but before then I'm not going to say anything because that would be the news. Everybody would talk about it. And we need to deal with this COVID. And Donald Trump, how he's killing Americans. So he's asked again. I'm glad these reporters continue to hound this. But normally it's not the mainstream media. It's local reporters. Good for you. So he says again, as a reporter asked him, he says, this is the number one thing I've been asked about from viewers in the past couple of days. He said, you're probably being asked by viewers who are probably Republicans to ask me. They don't want me to continue talking about what they're doing in the court right now. So the reporter, I'm going to give the credit, and there's a thin line between credit and blame, but the reporter identified as Ross DeMattei, maybe. I may be mispronouncing it. And he said, well, sir, referenced Joe Biden, don't the voters deserve to know? His answer, no, they don't. No, they don't. Biden saying voters do not deserve to know if it overthrow one of the three branches of government by basically packing the court just so he can control the court by adding additional members. And, of course, don't forget, they also want to add states. They want to make new states. Make D.C. a state. That'll get two senators automatic. That'll be two Democrat senators, mind you. And Puerto Rico. And maybe break up California and add more senators. This is how they plan on doing. They're going to change the rules. You do know, of course, that scheduled town hall debate has been canceled, obviously, because Trump said, I'm not going to do virtual. And then his doctor said, he's cleared to go. And the commission said, well, now Biden's tied up with something. So Trump is just going to do a campaign rally, which I think is great. He'll get more attention from that than the debate itself. But would that hurt him? But aside from that, and we'll get into that later with Dr. Lamero the next hour, C-SPAN Steve Scully, who was supposed to be the moderator, and he was caught the other day on a Twitter account asking Scaramucci, one of the former White House people before he decided, or the Trump decided to get rid of him, and he has such a hate for Trump now, asking him, should I answer Trump about as he's attacking me? Steve Scully now saying, I didn't send it. My account got hacked. The Election Commission, I should not, the Election Commission, the Presidential Debate Commission, says that with authorities investigating and saying, but we believe him. I mean, he's very, you know, he's ethical. He's ethical. You had him as an intern at one time as Joe Biden, posing with him, saying, this is my man. Not too long ago, writing a tweet saying, I hate Trump, and you were making him a moderator of the next debate? John Malcolm, Heritage Foundation, coming up next.
You can hear podcasts of this program at Larry Connors USA Facebook. Larry Connors USA Facebook. This is Larry Connors USA. Larry Connors USA.
Glad to have our guest we've had on numerous times before, John Malcolm with the Heritage Institute, an expert on constitutional law and the Supreme Court. And John, welcome back, sir.
Good to be with you, Larry.
So here we go today. The hearing's kicking off. And the first thing the Judiciary Chairman, Senator Graham, says, can we have some civility? How far do you think that's going to go?
not very far. The real fireworks start tomorrow when they question the nominee. It'll be two very long days of questioning. All we're getting today are the opening statements of the senators. And I actually thought when I was listening to the Democratic senators that I had turned on the wrong channel, and that instead of hearing a Supreme Court confirmation hearing, I was hearing a program about the merits and demerits of Obamacare, because that's what it is that they want to talk about. And they have, you know, photos blown up of constituents who have had pre-existing conditions, no doubt very, very sympathetic stories. And, you know, they are of course, predicting that a Justice Barrett is going to cause mayhem and havoc for all of those people.
Now, Senator Feinstein was, as you said in her opening statement, made it clear that she's going to grill Barrett on Obamacare, and several do believe that she would undermine it. And that's mainly because the remarks Trump had said previously, that he wants a court, and when, as a president, he will make sure the justices he puts in will get rid of that darn thing, my phrasing, not his. So that's what they're pinning it on. What do we know about her rulings on anything that might relate to anything along this line?
Well, she hasn't issued any rulings in Obamacare. What the fuss is about are not only the statements that President Trump has made in the past, but she wrote in a Law Review article that she was critical of the analysis that Chief Justice Roberts used in the first Obamacare case, in which he upheld the constitutionality of the individual mandate by relabeling something that had been called a penalty, a tax. You may recall that even afterwards, President Obama said, you know, no, this wasn't a tax, it was a penalty. If he had called it a tax at the time Obamacare was being passed and people saw Obamacare as a tax increase, it, of course, never would have passed. And there is now another case involving Obamacare that's coming up before the Supreme Court, and so that's what the fuss is all about. Of course, the legal issues are completely different in this case. As a sitting justice, she would have to consider the arguments of counsel and consult with her colleague. And, of course, regardless of what it is the Supreme Court decided to do, it's up to the political branches of government, specifically the House and the Senate, to decide whether to keep, overturn, or amend Obamacare.
When that case was before the Supreme Court, I was doing an interview with Obama, and one of the questions I asked him about, because he had said days before the decision came down that I'm sure the court would do the right thing. And I asked him, are you trying to use your position as a bully pulpit to tell the court what to do? So if Trump is already indicating this is what he wants in justices, how do you classify that as a bully pulpit versus what I asked Obama at the time?
Well, I think it'll be very well. One, he was trying to pressure sitting justices who had already heard the case and were in the middle of writing their opinions. I think it will be perfectly fair game to ask Amy Coney Barrett whether she was asked about this or gave any kind of guarantees or, to quote Ruth Bader Ginsburg, hints or suggestions about how she would rule in the pending Obamacare case. I am quite confident the answer is going to be she wasn't asked about it, she didn't offer an opinion, and she hasn't given any hints or suggestions about how she would rule in that case if she was confirmed.
And the reason it's right front and center now, as Senator Feinstein had pointed out, you mentioned already this previous rule, California v. Texas, to be argued before the Supreme Court's already set for November 10th for an argument.
Yes, that's right. So this is the third challenge to Obamacare. But again, the legal issues are very, very different from what the issues were in the first two cases. And the landscape has changed. So one big issue would be, even if the individual mandate is struck down, whether or not it could be severed for the rest of Obamacare and the rest of the law upheld. And those are all very interesting questions that are going to be argued. And I'm sure that Justice Barrett, if, once she becomes Justice Barrett, as I expect she will be once she's confirmed, will keep an open mind.
You're listening to John Malcolm of the Heritage Foundation. And to the point of another issue, a prime issue, Roe v. Wade. Now, I was telling the audience that some of the paperwork that she had submitted did not include some documents, apparently, that she spoke to student groups at the Notre Dame campus under a group that was pro-life. And those, apparently, her remarks and so forth, and maybe even things she... I know they talked about an ad she signed off on, saying as she supported life, but these two anti-abortion student groups' paperwork, that's just now coming out. Now, was that something as an oversight? It wasn't presented, or an intent to try to keep it hidden? I don't know how anyone thought they would hide it if that was the intent.
Well, first of all, there's absolutely no secret that Amy Coney Barrett is pro-life. And, you know, she has said that she believes in life beginning at conception through natural death. That did not prevent her, by the way, as a judge on the Seventh Circuit Court of Appeals from upholding death penalties, which, of course, would involve somebody being executed, not to the end of natural life. What I haven't heard anything about any speeches. What I have heard is there was a letter that she signed saying that she believed that life began at conception through natural death. There was apparently on the adjoining page an advertisement from some group saying that Roe versus Wade needed to be overturned. There is some real question as to whether or not when she signed that letter, Amy Coney Barrett ever saw that advertisement. The organization has said, no, it just signed the letter saying this is our belief that life goes from conception to natural death. We didn't show the signatories the ad that we were running, but she may be asked about that too.
You mentioned already that before I leave the religion thing, Nancy Pelosi
sure.
A week ago had said, and Nancy, of course, is also Catholic, saying her religion should not be an issue. And yet she spun around within 3 days later and saying, we need to know where she stands on this. I mean, on one hand, and you got Chuck Schumer, he's a Catholic. They're all sitting up there, and yet, as Feinstein said, the dogma lives loudly within you. I mean, you're not allowed to have a religion and be a Supreme Court justice?
Yeah, somehow if you are pro-life, that disqualifies you from sitting on the Supreme Court. But, of course, if you're pro-choice, then you're eminently qualified to serve on the Supreme Court. So nobody asked Sonia Sotomayor, who's also Catholic, you know, about her faith. But and we'll see what the Democrats do here. But there is no question that, of course, Senator Feinstein said it was she was very concerned because the dogma lived loudly in her, and Senator Durbin was asking whether she was an Orthodox Catholic. Article 6 of the Constitution says that there shall be no religious test for any office of public trust, and being a justice in the Supreme Court is certainly an office of public trust, and, you know, it should be completely off limits. It was not at her 2017 confirmation hearing. We'll see how it goes this time around.
And, of course, against this backdrop, we have the election. We're right on the cusp of it anyway. And you got Joe Biden carrying the banner for the Democrats. Asked again the other day, are you, like other Democrats, in wanting to pack the court, add numbers to it so you have more control over it. And you know his response the other day was, voters don't deserve to know. They don't deserve to know.
Well, look, in 1983, when he was Senator Joe Biden, he said the idea of packing the court was a bonehead idea.
Right.
It's certainly a radical thing. There have been, you know, nine justices on the Supreme Court for over 150 years. It's not a number set forward in the Constitution. So if the Democrats take control of the House and they keep control of the House and they take control of the Senate and the White House and they blow up the legislative filibuster and pass a statute increasing the number of Supreme Court justices and probably lower court judges, too, they can do it. It is a very radical measure, and certainly it's rather surprising and shocking that he is not making a commitment one way or the other on this very important issue.
And what about that issue of adding to the justices? Even Ruth Bader Ginsburg said nine is the proper number.
Yeah, look, again, it's not set forward in the Constitution. It is by statute. But nine has appeared to work pretty darn well for over 150 years, and I think it would be seen as a blatantly political move if they were to try to pack the court. And, you know, the next time the Republicans would be in control, they would take it from 13 to 17. You know, I mean, where does it end? I mean, it just feeds the perception that the Supreme Court is nothing but another super legislature and another political body. And that is very damaging to not only the reputation of the court, but also to respect that we're supposed to have for the rule of law.
Place your money on a number and spin the wheel. Now, Senator Cruz the other day said it is imperative that we get this back to a full court, because if this election is contested, it will go right to the Supreme Court. You can't have a 4-4 division and resolve anything.
Well, look, let's hope that that we end up having a clean election and it does not end up going to the courts. You know, there are those, many of us remember Bush v. Gore, and this has the potential to be Bush v. Gore on steroids. I can't think of anything actually worse than having an election go up to the Supreme Court and having a court evenly divided, which is, of course, not to predict what the legal issues would be and how the justices would come down. But an evenly divided court under those circumstances would just be a disaster.
In the last 30 seconds for you, you already alluded to the fact you think she's going to be pushed through, and Democrats are acknowledging there's not much we could do. They may try some kind of tricks, but what can they possibly do that would do anything that would stop it or stall it?
Well, it's hard to imagine, you know, but of course things happened during the Kavanaugh hearings that I didn't foresee. But her credentials are just stellar. There's no way can attack her on that basis. And at the end of the day, that's what the Republican senators at the very least are going to vote on.
All right, John, thank you very much for your time and your expertise.
Good to be with you.
You will do it again. John Malcolm with Heritage Foundation, always a great, insightful, and full of information interview when I have him on board. Also remind you, Dr. Gerard Lamero will be joining us in the next hour as to how this Senate confirmation hearing might affect not only the presidential race, but Senate races. This is Columbus Day, but there's another story that goes with it.
This is Larry Connors, USA.
Larry Connors, USA.
This is Columbus Day, and of course now the PC, the political correct crowd, says you should not be honoring Columbus. He's such a bad guy. This should be Indigenous Peoples Day. Jared Stepman, we've had on numerous times before, is a writer for the Daily Signal. He has a piece I did not get a chance to talk to him direct, get him on the program. Really wouldn't have had time for it today, but I want to share what he wrote. He's talking about how D.C. is abolishing Columbus Day, but here's the truth about Columbus. Now, these historians, activists, progressives began attacking Columbus's legacy back in the late 20th century. They had a new narrative, and I say a new narrative, we'll show you why in a moment, that Columbus was in charge of pillaging and raping and genocide. Christopher Columbus, the Italian explorer credited with discovering America, and several Columbus monuments have been attacked, vandalized around the nation. That Columbus statue at Columbus Circle, New York City, now needs 24-hour guards. Mayor Bill de Blasio put it on a list of a commission to review, quote, offensive memorials. Far Left Watch, a watchdog organization, Antifa, other left-wing groups, planning to deface and attack Columbus statues all across the nation today. And they've already started. So we're being told by some that Columbus was such a bad guy. One of them came from historian Howard Zinn, according to this article by Jared Stepman, a far-left historian, and that he gets credit for a huge impact on changing the minds of a generation of Americans about the Columbus legacy. But there's another side, a factual side to it. Zinn claimed, behind the English invasion of North America, behind their massacre of Indians, deception, brutality, was that special powerful drive born in civilizations based on private profit. Well, others, contemporary historian Carol Delaney said, no, the money Columbus was trying to get was primarily dedicated to religious purposes. Everybody knows Columbus was trying to find gold, but they didn't know what the gold was for. At that time, it was to fund a crusade to take Jerusalem back from Muslims before the, quote, end of the world. At that time, many believed the apocalypse was on the verge of happening any time. And they wanted Jerusalem to be in Christian hands so Christ could return in judgment. But again, the critics, according to this article by Stepman, stated repeatedly that he was nothing but a man of greed, carried out genocide. Again, historians like Delaney have debunked these claims. They say rather than being cruel, he's mostly benign in his interaction with the natives. When it did happen, Columbus was quick to punish those under his command. In fact, he, quote, strictly told his crew, do not do things like maraud or rape, and instead treat the native people with respect. Now, these are among examples in his writings where he gave instructions to the effect I just read for you. And most of the time when injustices did occur, Columbus wasn't there. They say, even the historians who said he was not what they want you to believe, as far as being a genocidal maniac, he certainly wasn't a man without flaws or attitudes that might be unacceptable today, obviously. But he did not carry out the savage attacks that are now being dropped on him. And also pointing out, Columbus Day became a nationally celebrated holiday following a mass lynching of Italians in New Orleans, the largest incident of lynching in American history. That moved it to a national holiday, not just Columbus finding and discovering the New World. But the left does have an agenda. You know that. Look who they quote. Former Vice President Joe Biden again quoting late Chinese Communist Party leader Mao Zedong again. He said there's an old expression attributed to the Chinese, women hold up half the sky. The source, he doesn't know, maybe, is Chairman Mao, the founder of Communist China, one of the worst mass murderers of the 20th century. Now, he's quoted Mao before, saying, I chose Kamala Harris, based on an old Chinese proverb, women hold up the sky, hold up half the sky. One of Biden's senior advisors says, Mao is one of my favorite political philosophers. Are you listening, folks? Are you making sure your family, friends, and those who say, well, I can't go with Trump again, are they aware of what these progressives will do, want to do to this country? I don't mean change it. They want to transform it. You will not recognize it. I'd mentioned the opening monologue. Before we wrap up this hour, I'm going to read something to you. You might call, I'm not voting for Trump. You want to hear details of that. For those who cannot think of voting for Trump, you need to hear this. I'm not voting for Trump. I'll be sharing that with you before we wrap up the next hour. And as I said, Dr. Gerard Lamero would join us, talking about how this Senate confirmation hearing may or may not affect the election. More to come. Stay with us, please.
This is Larry Connors, USA.
Larry Connors, USA.
You've been listening to Larry Connors, USA. Please listen to previous and future podcasts.